All right, in our last class, we started looking at music as worship, and we started defining the word music, which we used a definition from Webster's Online, and we used some of these keywords that are in the definition. We did some word searches to see what we can learn about it, and started looking at some of what God's Word said about these things. Now, just to do a little quick review before we get into where we were, does it matter what kind of music is used in worship? Yes? Okay. Why? Why does it matter?
Because it's what God authorized.
God is specific about his, how we worship.
Okay. So he's specific, and so we have to do what's authorized. If we're wanting to please God, then we need to truly worship in the way that He asks, right? We have to worship in a way that's acceptable to Him. And just like we looked at in the last class, just because people call something worship, we can call something worship, and that doesn't necessarily mean that God's going to accept it as worship. So, what does that mean that we're going to have to do to be able to know what's acceptable?
Find out.
Okay. Study, or look to His Word and understand what He shows us as being acceptable for worship. So, some of the things that we looked at, why can't we use instrumental music with our singing?
Because it's not in the New Testament.
Okay, it's not authorized. Not in the New Testament, but aren't there examples of instrumental music in the Bible?
Well, yeah, that's in the Old Testament when they were celebrating and praising and worshiping.
Okay, well, it was in the Old Testament, but they did use music for worship as well in the Old Testament. But yes, we would find examples of music or mechanical instruments being used in the Old Testament. Okay, that was going to be one of the questions. So it does matter who as well. So just because something's in the Old Testament, we see that. I had a question. Just because something's in the Old Testament, does that authorize it? And of course, we know no. And why not? I mean, if we see these examples of things in the Old Testament, it's part of the Bible, why can't we use that?
Once you're going to carry out one thing, you need to carry out all of it. You carry out that part of the law, then you need to carry out all of it.
Like sacrifices. Okay. So it has to do with not being under that law.
Right.
Okay. What if something was used in the Old Testament? Does that mean we can't necessarily use that as well?
We have a new covenant.
Okay. So there could be something that was used in the Old Testament, and I'm going somewhere with that, I'm sorry, as far as singing, because we find singing in the Old Testament, mm-hmm. but the reason why we don't do something isn't necessarily because something was in the Old Testament. We see examples in the New Testament that show that singing is used as worship, which we're going to, that's where we're going to pick up here in a minute. Well, and that right, and that's some of the things we looked at in the last class. Now, the and like Jim just brought up, as far as you know, we have there's no example in the New Testament as far as instrumental music as worship. And as far as when we have these Old Testament examples, there was it wasn't just anybody anyway that did this. This was the Levites that did this. So that's one thing we need to keep in mind as well. Just because if someone wants to use the example of the Old Testament, even if we were under that law, still, we wouldn't be ones that were doing that. Did you have a comment, Rocky? Or?
Craig, you're making the comment that in the New Testament, there's no instances of musical instruments. And I guess you can look at the verses here as well, but I'll be aware that in Revelation. You know, there's two places where it talks about the harps of God, Revelation 5:8 and Revelation 15. Two harps of God in 15:8, and then in 5:8, you know, it talks about a harp. So be aware to be able to answer those questions because someone might pipe up with the music questions in heaven.
Okay. But that's if I understand, I'd have to look at the verses, but those are talking about in heaven, though, right?
Okay. That could be in a figurative sense.
Right. Okay. But, so as far as what we would use as an example for worship today, we wouldn't, which I'm sure that verse probably does come up. I don't know. I haven't really challenged that a lot. So I'm not sure. I'm sure a lot of y'all that have had more experience with that probably have run into that. So I'm gonna write that down too. Thank you, Rob. We saw that even though the Old Testament had singing, so does New Testament. And in our last class, we looked at a couple of things or a couple of examples of singing in the Old Testament, and we're about to look at some examples in the New Testament. But out of these things that we looked at, what were some of the things that were being sung about? Why were they singing in these examples? What were they doing?
Praise.
Okay, they were giving praise or thanks. Had to do with God's worthiness, some of the examples we saw, and His power, so and etc. We saw different ideas there. Now, when we started looking at the New Testament verses, I don't know where it is on my page, but
New Testament.
Yeah. Okay, on page 59. Down there, I listed some verses because I did a word study on the words sing and singing. And when I did this word study, the only words I found the only verses I found in the New Testament are the ones that I've noted here. For sing, it was Romans 15:9, 1 Corinthians 14:15, Hebrews 2:12, and James 5:13. And for the word singing, there was Matthew 26:30, Mark 14:26, Acts 16:25, Ephesians 5:19, and Colossians 3:16. And we're going to look at these different verses. Now, out of these nine verses that came up in the word study, seven of these are part of what's called the eight witnesses that we, and we'll look at these in just a moment. Now, if you'll remember from Jeff's class, when he was teaching the auditorium, Matthew 26, 30, and Mark 14 aren't considered part of these witnesses. And that's because they took place before the death of Christ. Now, these eight witnesses help us to understand what kind of music is authorized under the New Covenant. If you'll turn to Romans, in Romans 15:9, it says, "Therefore I will give praise to you among the Gentiles, and I will sing to your name." So see this idea of singing, and we're going to see this same idea over and over as we look at these other verses. In 1 Corinthians 14:15, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have a question. How can this be one of the eight witnesses? This is a quote from the Old Testament. I mean, that's a
rocky.
Yeah, that's okay.
Sorry.
Well, it's still, but it's in, yes, it is a quote from the Old Testament, but it's still being used here in the New Testament. Let me go back to Romans 15. Because basically, all I'm looking at is where this word has been used in the New Testament, this word sing. So basically, that's all I'm doing here. When I did the word study, it showed different verses where this word sing comes up. Now, yes, it is referring to the Old Testament, but it's still showing this in the New Testament.
Yeah, but how does it authorize the kind of music under the New Covenant?
By itself, I'm not sure necessarily, but when we look at these other witnesses, we'll see the same idea. Any thoughts on that? Does anybody have any thoughts on answering that question? No?
Well, I guess it's an Old Testament prophecy about Christ in chapter 12. Way back then, Paul's taking it and bringing it forward so it's applicable today.
Right.
Cast way back then, but it's applicable today, so he's making application.
Okay. And we see other examples like that. Okay. Did that help any, or
no? I see that it's a prophecy about Christ.
Down to verse 12, you know, he's Gentiles going to praise among thee, you know, salvation to the Gentiles, and then it talks about verse 12, the root of Jesse. So, talking about Christ.
All right, 1 Corinthians 14:15. It says, "I will sing with the spirit, and I will sing with the mind also." Again, these are just examples where we're seeing this word being used. In Hebrews 2:12. Again, quoting Old Testament, says, in the midst of the congregation, I will sing your praise. So we see this idea of singing praise. We see that again in James 5:13. Says that he is to sing praises when it's talking about one that is cheerful. In Acts 16:25, says here, praying and singing hymns of praise in God. And even in this example here, who is it speaking of that was doing this singing?
Paul and Silas.
Okay. So we see this idea of the Apostle Paul doing this. In Ephesians 5:19, saying that we are to speak to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing, making melody with your heart to the Lord. So we see this idea of singing. In Colossians, let the word of Christ richly dwell within you, with all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with thankfulness in your hearts to God. So we see this idea of singing over and over. Now the verses that we just looked at, that's only seven of them. The one that is considered number eight out of the eight witnesses isn't found in this because it doesn't use the word sing or singing. It refers to it as fruit of the lips. Now, that can include singing. I'm not saying that is only singing. In Hebrews 13:15. Let us continue to offer up a sacrifice of praise to God, that is, the fruit of the lips, to give thanks to His name. So this idea of praising God, and the idea that we looked at these, how they were praising with singing and giving thanks. Is there any thoughts or comments on the eight witnesses or this before we go into the point three, Roman numeral three? Okay. I put here thoughts that some might have about music. And we're going to look at a couple of different things, but these were just stuff that I thought of, and I'm sure y'all have other things y'all were thinking of or y'all might have run into. But like the idea, wouldn't it sound better to have musical instruments? Well, maybe. well, that's true. Not necessarily. But I mean, you could even answer it maybe, you know. But the idea is that just because something would sound better, that doesn't necessarily authorize it. That doesn't make it okay to do it.
Doesn't matter how it sounds to us.
Right. That's true. And that's from the standpoint I was talking about, what people might think sounds better. Of course,
kitchen and a gym sounds good too.
Yeah, food, yeah. That's true.
Steve is always making the comment about or the Lord's Supper changing it to Diet Coke and bread.
Or, well, him, something it would be Krispy Kremes, I know. Right, so it's not up to us to decide on things like that. And we'll see that in some of our further lessons when we get into Lord's Supper. But one thing I put on here was remember Uzzah, and I know we looked at this example further back in one of the other classes, but what was the problem here?
They used a cart.
Okay. So they did something that wasn't authorized. Okay. And they might even, from what it sounds like when you read this, because it's talking about the things that's going on, it sounds like they're worshiping and everything. There doesn't show anything here, at least the way I look at it, that would make you think that they are not trying to please God. But, so maybe you could say they thought they had a good idea. But, and maybe they thought they were improving how they carry the ark. But, that doesn't necessarily give us the authority to do things.
Craig?
Yes, ma'am.
In First Chronicles, was when they're moving the ark back to Jerusalem in chapter 15, and David's giving a discourse on what they did wrong. In verse 13, he says, because we did not consult him about the proper order.
Okay.
So, to me, that's the same thing as what you're talking about.
Okay. So it's not up to us on certain things when there's specifics. One thing I think about is, maybe if I can word this right, as far as if you think about with your kids, if you tell them to do something specifically, let's say you tell them to do something specifically and they don't, they might give you an answer, well, I thought, you know, sometimes they say, well, I thought this would be better, or I thought that would be better. And of course, there is some reasoning involved in certain things, but when you're specific about something, you know, it's almost like there doesn't need to be any thinking. And I know it's maybe the wrong way of wording that, but in a sense that's true. When you're told something specific, then that's what we need to do. And sometimes, the answers we might, the answers we might get from our children might show that they were doing some reasoning. But sometimes, at least personally to me, if it's something that I was very specific on for a reason, then that's what I expect. And if our child tells us something and they're trying to reason and they say, well, I did this or whatever, you know, sometimes me personally, and we're nowhere close to the capability of God. You know, his capacity and knowledge. And just as a little human, I know it can be upsetting to think, well, I know that. I thought of that too, but there's reasons why we do things. So we need to keep that in mind too. Let's not think that if we're doing something and we know it was told specific to do it a certain way, we don't want to say, well, I thought this was a better way. I mean, because God knows what the best way is. And of course, that's going to anger him. Do you have a comment?
Well, yeah. When you were talking about that, and that's the problem with my kiddos too, I asked them, I said, well, now, I asked you to do something a certain way, and I'll go over the same lesson with them. I said, now, when God said do it a certain way, and you vary from that, have you obeyed? Have you obeyed His commandments? No. I said, when I asked you to do something, and you did this extra, you did that extra, did you obey? Did you do what I said? And you know, they have to answer. They've got you made the analogy with them.
Right.
And they've got to answer that. It's a good lesson. It's a good lesson. And God knew that. It's an excellent lesson to teach that with them. And Steve's done the same. In fact, we've heard from many of you. But what you're saying really works. It really fits. It's an excellent lesson. Which the Lord knew that, obviously.
Okay.
But what you're saying works. It's just related.
Okay. Because, well, in a sense, it almost challenges your knowledge. Mm-hmm. But we need to think on the other foot. Things that we're doing, we could be challenging God's knowledge, and we don't need to insult Him. We need to, you know, do as He asks. Yes, ma'am.
Well, just kind of like you said, like challenging His knowledge. Like when you tell a kid, "Don't run in the house." I wasn't running; I was skipping. So we do that too sometimes with God's rules.
Okay.
Well, I didn't disobey because I didn't do it, but I did. So, but it's all encompassing.
Right. I don't know if I worded that the right way. I'm not trying to say there's not reasoning involved on certain things, but some things, when it's specific, we need to keep that in mind. Are there any other comments or thoughts on that? Or it is warm in here.
Uh-huh. I've been fanning since 7:30, Craig.
Sorry.
Well, it came on a while ago, and it was cool a little bit, so I put the thing down.
You have to understand who he lives with. He may have thought you just didn't have any medicine. Ow.
So any thoughts or comments or... No? No. So we might not know why God does certain things, but we don't have to know. I mean, if He doesn't share with us, then we don't have to know. But we do know that we can trust in Him and that He knows best. So we need to always keep that in mind. Now, what about... what about Nadab and Abihu? What happened here?
They offered strange fire.
Okay. So they offered strange fire. And they were consumed by fire when they offered this up. Which the verse explains as being fire that was not commanded. That was in Leviticus.
Ten,
yeah. Leviticus 10, 1. I think 1. Yeah, 1.
Yeah, 1 and 2.
So we see here that they were consumed by fire when they offered up strange fire, which was not commanded. Now, verse 3 says that Moses said to Aaron, "It is what the Lord spoke, saying, by those who come near me, I will be treated as holy. Before all people, I will be honored." So, verse 3 explains something that we need to keep in mind. And the first two verses help explain or show that this was important. Now, when Moses was speaking, when he said that those who come near me and I will be treated as holy, and before all the people I will be honored. When I read this. The story here, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know exactly why they were consumed by the fire. I mean, we only know what we're told, and that has to do with them not doing what was commanded. I mean, that's obvious. But, you know, when, at least in the example of Uzzah that we looked at first, you know, it showed that God expects us to do what we're told. And although he was trying to protect the ark, you could say it's clear that the ark was not to be touched. And although this example here that we're about Nadab and Abihu, this too is an example to us, but I think this might have to do something with the heart. I don't know for certain, but the reasoning behind why they were offering this strange fire. And I don't know if anybody has any thoughts on that. Because as far as I know, there's not anywhere that it really explains why, but any thoughts or comments? Going somewhere, brother? No? Okay. Well, I saw you turn on that.
No, I think you tried for Mr. Reference. I think you're right. I mean, I don't know of any place where it says specifically.
Okay.
But it is an act. Except right here. You get the implication in verse 3.
Right.
What was going wrong.
Right. Okay, so. Oh, did you have a comment, Rocky?
Here, verse 3, an interesting phrase in that middle verse says, by those who come near me, I will be treated as holy. There's a phrase that occurs in another place in Leviticus, some phrases we're very familiar with, and because it applies to Christians, it's actually used in Peter. The phrase goes, says, you be holy, for I am holy. You know, we be holy, we are to be set apart. It says, for God, for I am holy. You look at that word holy, and what best I understand it is, you know, God is holy. He set apart. What do you mean there? Holy can also imply holy one. So I think that's what makes sense here. How is God treated holy? He is the holy one, which means he is Lord. And what they're doing here is doing something, you know, against his
against
will.
That, right.
You know, not treating him as who he is. He's the Lord. You've got to do what I tell you, because he's the Lord. You're not treating his holy as a holy one.
Okay.
And it just gets back, but it's a kind of a neat phrase there that occurs, like I said, with that.
Okay. Thank you, Rob. Were there any other comments or thoughts? No? Okay. And just another side note, is especially those of us that lead, we need to keep in mind that we need to do the right things for the right reason. And our heart and our attitude towards leading in worship needs to be right. We should always strive to do our best, but keep in mind to do this to honor God and not ourselves. So we need to watch that as we lead. What about... I had another idea I thought of. What if, because something you might run into. What about singing outside of the assembly? Okay, remember what we looked at in our first classes about this idea of worship. Now, worship doesn't necessarily mean as a group. I mean, we can still do this individually, and it has to do with God's worthiness. So, if we're singing words that express our devotion and praise to God, no matter where that is, that is worship. So, if there's instruments accompanying this, then we need to understand that that's not acceptable worship. So this is something we need to keep in mind, and something I'm sure many of y'all might have already run into, maybe with your kids in school, something that you might run into. So we need to keep that in mind with these functions during certain seasons and school functions. and also to be able to, or talk to our children about that, especially if it's something that they're facing at school that they might not be able to participate in, and we need to try to explain why instead of just saying, well, just because or whatever. But we need to keep those things in mind. Besides just things like that, one thing that we can run into, let me see where I might be getting ahead of myself. Well, one thing we need to keep in mind is that sin has to do with the heart. And as we look at in Ephesians 5:19, we're to sing and make melody with our heart. And that is singing from the heart as an expression of praise and devotion. Just a question. Is all a cappella acceptable? No?
Okay. Not all worship.
Right. Well, not all what you would call it, right? So, and to better phrase my question, let's say you agree that they're... Let's say you're talking to somebody and they agree that, yes, okay. I agree there shouldn't be instrumental music in this when you're singing, as far as, because this is a song of worship. And they might even agree with you that, okay, it doesn't matter if we're at the building or if this is personal worship or whatever. But then you run into this this idea about music that's a cappella. Okay, well, you know, what if it's all a cappella? And I wrote some things here, and the idea I'm having is, let's say, well, somebody says, well, listen to this music here. It's all a cappella. There's no musical instruments in it. Just this... These songs of worship, you know, that those beats you hear and stuff, that's not really music. That's somebody making it with their mouth. You know, that's, they're doing it vocally. So does that make it okay? I mean, it's not an instrumental music. I mean, it's not an instrument. It's not a trick question. Sorry.
Didn't be right, didn't be wrong.
It could make it wrong.
No, but it doesn't necessarily. I mean, it didn't make it either way.
Well, if this is a song of... I'm talking about if it's a song of worship. And the idea is here that all singing is a cappella. Okay, but not all a cappella is singing. So if we're doing what is authorized, I mean, it's specific for singing is what we're looking at. So I don't think that it's right as far as the doing the a cappella, the sounds.
They're singing with this, whatever it is?
Right. Basically what it is, it's, okay, you have people singing worship music. It might sound like a CD that you received from somebody that has actual instrumental music with it. But they might say, well, but those aren't real instruments. That's people making that sound a cappella.
It's not words.
They have bands in
right.
Band.
Right.
So
it's artificially generated.
No,
I mean, they're just like, they're going with their voice or with their tongue, but there's no instruments.
No words.
Right.
Not
words. They're not words, yeah.
So, I mean, that's what I had in mind. So, the question was, do you see a... Do you see a problem with that?
I see the same problem that there is with a choir. Okay. Everybody's not worshiping. Everybody's not singing.
Okay.
You know, it's some are listening or whatever.
Okay. Okay. And as far as with this, yeah, because with this, those that are making these, I guess it's still a melody. But
it's not a melody.
It's
I think the key thing is it's not words. They're not singing words.
Right.
But they're making music.
Right. Because and I'd agree with you because it's not definitely not singing.
Right.
So that is where I would definitely have a problem with because the a cappella is as far as singing is a cappella, but not all a cappella is singing, and it says that we are to sing. And when we accompany in this way, to me it's the same as using instruments as far as following God's will on this subject. That's just the way I look at it. But because he's specific, we're to use psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Are there any thoughts or comments on this? I know it's kind of a...
You know, you go back in 1 Corinthians 14:15, one of the witnesses... of course, the context has to do with spiritual gifts in general, but still Paul makes a point about it. And he says, I was saying the spirit and saying the mind also. The context is when you're speaking, tongues or anything else, it is it needs to be understandable,
right,
either directly or by interpretation for the edification of the brethren. You talk about being about certainly being in the midst of people, backed up by Colossians and Ephesians, which is what you're saying. It's not the beauty of the melody.
Right.
It's just kind of what the thing you were hitting at.
Right.
People playing instruments with effectively their voice as their instrument.
Right.
So I don't know where you get, you know, from the standpoint of where does God ask for that kind of worship? I don't know where it is.
Right.
Fundamentally, and it goes back to this is the very nature of worship, claiming something to God. And noise is not a proclamation of anything but noise. Even if it's pretty noise, it's
right.
Not noise. It's not conveying anything. God gave us the mind, God gave us words to convey what was on our mind.
Okay. Any other thoughts or comments? We have about a minute. It's going to buzz on us. So we'll pick up here, and in the next class, I didn't bring any lessons with me, but Sunday I'll bring